Welcome to Torah Timecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Shaiwitz, and today we are studying Yeshayahu Perek Dalet. Perek Dalet closes the prophetic unit that we've been studying, which includes Perakim Bet, Gimel, and Dalet. So when we finish reading through these psukim today, we'll talk about the big picture. Also interesting is that Perek Dalet is a tiny little perek with only six psukim, but as usual, lots of big ideas. Before we look at the psukim, I want to explain the different ways that psukim in Tanakh in general are broken up. So one way, which we're all very familiar with, it's the way that this podcast is working, is with the division of prakim, chapters. And this is a 13th century Christian division that usually follows the theme. But there's another way that chunks of psukim in Tanakh are broken up, and that's with the parsha breaks, which are when you see either a closed space on a line or an open space where the line continues in the subsequent line. And that's called a parsha break, and that's a Masoretic division, which means that it's a Masorah, that this is the way that the Torah should be written and transmitted. And what's interesting about this perek is that if you look at Perek Dalet inside, you'll notice something funny, which is that Pasuk Aleph is still grouped Masoretically with the Psukim that precede it in Perek Gimel. And the Parsha break only occurs after Pasuk Aleph. So what we have here is a disagreement between the division of the Perek, or the chapter division, and the Parsha breaks. So let's start by reading Pasuk Aleph, and we'll try to understand why it would have been grouped together with Perek Gimel, chapter 3, which we studied yesterday. So Pasuk Aleph begins and says, V'hechaziku sheva nashim b'ish achad b'yomahu le'mor lachmenu nochel v'simlatenu nilbash raki kare shimcha aleinu esof cherpatenu. And it describes a situation which says, again, on that day, seven women will grab onto one man, saying, we'll eat our own food and we'll wear our own clothes, meaning we will provide for ourselves financially. Only let us be called by your name. Take away our disgrace. And this seems to be describing still this time of desperation where women feel that they have no protection. So many women cling to one man to protect them. And this clearly connects with what we studied in chapter 3 for a whole bunch of reasons. First of all, in Perek Gimel, chapter 3, we described a dark time period in the future, where as a way of lowering people from their false sense of arrogance, the elite women would lose their wealth and their status, symbolized by the loss of their fine clothing and jewelry that they used to ornament themselves. This could easily be a continuation of that narrative by depicting these former high society ladies who are now so desperate for protection that they grab onto any man who will be able to provide for them. Also, the shidduch crisis that's described in this pasuk also has roots in the perek before, as the scarcity of men is likely due to their death in battle, where the weapons no longer protect them. Now, the ending of this pasuk is also, I think, particularly poignant, where the women say, esof cherpatenu, gather in our disgrace, because the loss of status has been really humiliating for them, and they look to these men to provide them at least some relief from that. This, to me, is one of the darkest psukim that we have read, and we have read many dark psukim, so we almost need that physical space of the parsha break in order to move to the next section, which is full of hope. What we'll still need to discuss, and we will come back to this at the end, is why the chapter division may have chosen not to put the break here. So the pasuk continues, pasuk bet, Bayom hahu yihiyet semach Hashem litzvi vilikavod upri haaretz ligaon v'tiferet lipleita Yisrael. And translated, on that day, the sprout of Hashem, that's the tzemach Hashem, will be beauty and gloryful. And the fruits of the land will be for dignity and majesty for the survivors of Israel. Now, I think what this is describing is that after the devastation that was described in the last two chapters, this pasuk almost takes my breath away with all of its hope. Almost every word in that pasuk that we just read is hopeful. This pasuk talks about regrowth, and the particular growth can be understood on two levels. Firstly, The land will flourish. The plants will grow. Those plants will bear fruit. No longer will there be hunger. No longer will the land be barren. It will be a fruitful, beautifully flourishing land. Many of the Parshanim also understand this to be not only related to the land, or maybe even not at all, but a sign of regrowth of the leadership, that the leadership is compared to this tzemach, this sprout. And here the commentaries kind of fall into two camps, as either predicting a future righteous king that will come after a difficult time period, such as perhaps anticipating the kingship of Chizkiyahu, and we'll talk about that when we get there, or perhaps it's referring to the messianic time period in an almost like indefinite way, that at that time, leadership that is pure will spring up again. The psukim continue in this very hopeful vein. And this is Pasuk Gimel. V'haya ha-nish'ar b'tzion v'ha-notar b'yushalayim kadosh yamer lo kol ha-katuv l'chayim b'yushalayim. And all those who remain in Tzion, those who are left in Jerusalem, those who are inscribed for life, they will be called holy. And this again is comfort for those who survive this terrible time period. They will be kadosh, they will be sanctified, and these people will be inscribed in the Book of Life, language that's very familiar to us from our liturgy of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Now, why are these survivors, why are these people called kadosh? So it could be it's because of all they've gone through, they have been cleansed, or perhaps it's the other meaning of the word kadosh, which is that kadosh means sanctified, set aside. And maybe these people will be set aside and protected. The group that's left will be protected by Hashem from the devastation that the prior generation encountered. And then the pasuk continues, pasuk Dalid, Im richatz Hashem et zoat benot Zion vet me Yerushalayim yadiach mikirbaha. Sorry, mikirba, beruach mishpat uberuach ba'er. When Hashem has washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion, and from Jerusalem he's rinsed out all of her blood, and he's done this in a spirit of judgment and in a spirit of purging them. So here again, we actually return to the women of Jerusalem, and in this case, we come to their rehabilitation. And metaphorically, it's Hashem who will be wiping off the filth from these women, and that filth represents either their suffering or their sins. And to me, this is just such a nurturing picture of Hashem, who's almost like a parent who's cleaning up a young child or bandaging them after a fall, helping them go through that process of repair, regrowth after the difficult time. And then the psukim continue. Uvara Hashem et kol machon har tzion v'al mikra'eha anan yomam v'ashan v'noga esh lahava laila ki al kol kavod chupa. And Hashem will create over the meeting places of har tzion, he'll create a cloud by day and a flame, a fire by night, and over all of their glory there'll be a canopy. And the psukim continue in a beautiful vein, v'sukah tiye letzel yomam mechorev ulimachzeh ulimistor mizerem umimatar. And this canopy, this chupa, will be a pavilion that will provide shade for them from the heat by day and a shelter for protection against the drenching rain. And you can pick up on here that in this future time period, while Hashem will restore us, there's also a looking back, because there are many biblical references to the time that the Jews spent in the desert, in the Midbar, such as the Anan, the cloud that protected them during the day, and the Esh, the fire that led them and protected them at night. And here too, their return, right, their restoration, brings us back to perhaps a more idyllic time period where the cloud and the fire protected them. And so too also the sukkah is mentioned, because the midrash, the famous midrash about Sukkot, is what were the Sukkot that we remember in the Midbar, in the desert? Were they actually huts, structures? Or were they the Ananea Kavod? Were they Hashem's clouds that are protecting us? And here, this also resonates again, going with the idea that they were the clouds, that this is these clouds and the fire of Hashem will protect us. And I think that all these images, again, create this sense of protection, love, and nurture. Okay, so let's take a step back for a minute now that we've finished this perek, which is short in psukim, although big in ideas. And let's talk about it in the context that surrounds it. So the first pasuk, as we said, really belongs with the chapter before it. And it is, and masoretically, it is broken up like this. But the truth is, maybe there's a reason why it's put here in Perek Dalet, together with the rest of this Perek that is so hopeful. And I saw an interesting interpretation in the Dot Mikra series on Yeshayahu, which said that perhaps in Pasuk Aleph of this Perek, the women turn to the remaining men, right, with the plea to the men, take us in order to gather us up and remove our humiliation. But in the next few psukim, what it actually describes is all the ways that Hashem will help those women, gather them up, nurture them, clean them, and provide them with shelter and security. So that juxtaposition, the jarring devastation that the parak begins with, along with the kind, nurture, future-focused peace that the parak ends with, is jarring, but in a very positive way. Now, we also mentioned at the beginning that this parak forms a unit with the preceding two chapters. So let's talk a little bit about what that structure looked like. So Perek Bet began with a utopian vision of all nations laying down their swords, streaming to Har Hashem, where Hashem will preside with justice. And in the second half of Perek Bet, Yeshayahu switched and described a dystopian vision of Yom Hashem, where all that's high will be brought low, except for Hashem, who will be raised. In Perek Gimel, Yeshayahu described how this would play out in Yehudah, the southern kingdom, with the lowering of the leaders, the women, and the men. Perek Dalet then closes this future-focused piece with another utopian vision of Hashem protecting and nurturing Bnei Israel once again and rebuilding them physically and emotionally. So I want to close by asking you to notice, I guess, three things here. First of all, in the structure of those three prakim, it's interesting to note the sandwich structure, this mix of hope and chastisement, meaning starting with a hopeful vision, turning to the very negative vision, and ending with another hopeful vision. And I think that that's something that is true about Yeshayahu in general, which contains such a stark mix of very, very hopeful visions, very optimistic messianic pieces, and also very difficult psukim to read where there's musar and also description of punishment. I believe that the utopian vision of Perek Bet is one that we describe something that we would come to on our own. Yeshayahu is encouraging the people to internalize the messages that he's giving them, messages of ethics and justice, and asking them to build a universal community that looks to Hashem and Torah for their values. However, Yeshayahu is also realistic that this may not play out. So instead, he describes a different vision, or I would say maybe he follows it by a different vision, where the return of a value-based society can only be achieved by a divine intervention, where Hashem purges this arrogance from society. Now, this period, it doesn't have that sense of like the nature and the calm of Perek Bet. This will be a difficult and painful period, but this will also be followed by a nurturing and rebuilding period by Hashem. By doing this, the Navi once again poses the question to his audience, can you get there? Can you rebuild your society on your own? Or will you need to be broken down first in order to rebuild? I believe that the Navi is still asking us these questions. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmat, Malka Esther, Bat Tzvi Yosef.